I'll ask you to turn to Genesis chapter 48. Genesis 48. I'm going to have to preach like Brother Humphreys tonight. I'm going to have to hit it and get it. We've got a business meeting. I'm going to try to be done by 8:15 so that we can have our business meeting. When I was a little boy, I had a grandpa that always had a mule. And anytime I would go over to Reidsville, Georgia, he always wanted to show me his mule. It wasn't always the same mule. And one of the things that he would always want to give to me was some kind of pocket knife. And he would kid me when I was a little kid. He'd reach into his bib overalls and he'd pull out a plug of chewing tobacco. And he'd say, "You want a chaw?" And I'd say, "No, sir, I don't." He said, "Let's go look at the mule." And so he was always wanting to spend time with me, and that's how he did it. He was kind of a happy old man, my grandpa Anderson, and so I have those memories of him. One of the things that I notice as I have gotten older myself, that I look more and more like him. He was a happy man, and his eyes are like mine. When he would laugh, that his eyes would disappear. And sometimes when I laugh, my eyes disappear. And so when I was thinking this afternoon about what I wanted to speak on this evening, I got to thinking about Joseph and the fact that he was an old fella. But he had a blessing that came into his life just before he died. And it's been 2 or 3 years ago now. I spoke on a grandmother. It was Grandma Naomi. And I guess what really drove that sermon home in my mind happened after the service. After the service, Miss Marge Wynn came up to me and she said, "Brother Tommy," she said, "William and I," she's talking about Brother Bill. She calls him William. She said, "William and I were at an insurance convention, and Colin Powell was speaking. And he closed out his speech by saying this, 'I've seen the lights of Paris, and I've seen the lights of Rome, but I've never seen anything quite as glorious as the taillights of the grandkids going home.'" And when she told me that, for some reason, that poem and that sermon was indelibly printed in my mind. Now, there's other times when I can't tell you if I preached on something or not. But not only do we have one guy in our church that can tell you when I preached out of a passage, I have learned as of this past Sunday, we've got two. Not only can Lynn Ward tell me when I preach something, but Harry Puckett can do the same thing. And so I told Brother Harry, I said, "Just because I use a passage don't mean that I'm using the same material." And so anyway, this evening I want to speak to you on this subject. Grandpa said four things. Grandpa said four things. Look with me at chapter 48, verse 1. "And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, 'Behold, thy father is sick.' And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, 'Behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee.' And Israel," which is Jacob, you remember his name was changed. So it's talking about Jacob. "And Israel," or Jacob, "strengthened himself and sat upon the bed." You know, one of the things that blesses the hearts of grandparents is when the grandkids come to see them. And one of the things that's sad is when the grandkids don't come to see them. I'm talking about there are folks that their grandkids have not come to see them in years. And they would love to have a grandchild come by and see them. My wife and I count ourselves to be blessed because almost on a daily basis we get to see our grandkids. And we just feel that God has just really showered us with blessing because of that. But there's some that do not have that. Jacob was really in that category. He had not seen these boys. And Joseph was so busy being the prime minister of Egypt that he really didn't get to see his dad much either. And so now we have the situation, and you've got Jacob is an old man. He's sick. And so Jacob being sick, his son says, well, we need to go see dad. And so that's what they do. And so, and you come to verse 3, and this is one of our text verses tonight. And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. Now what you have is you've got God telling Abraham many, 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 many years ago, Jacob's grandfather, Abraham, was given this promise by God. It came through his father, Isaac, and now it's going through him, and so he is rehearsing what God has reestablished in Jacob's life or Israel's life, and he is telling this to his son. And so the first thing that I want you to see is that he shared his testimony in front of his grandkids. Now, I want that to sink in for a moment. I believe that as a Christian grandpa, when I get the opportunity, I ought to make sure that my grandkids know that their grandfather's a saved man. I want them to know that God has done something for me. If you want to find out when Jacob met the Lord, it happened 20 chapters before this chapter. It's in Genesis 28. And the story goes that he is sleeping and he has a vision. And you remember the story. And I remember as a little kid having a picture Bible. And it had a picture of him there asleep at night and a ladder coming down from heaven. And the angels ascending and descending on that ladder. Well, that was at a place called Luz, and the name got changed that night to Bethel. And so Jacob met God at Bethel. And so when I began thinking about that, he shared that testimony, I began to think, what should we as grandparents, what should we tell those grandkids? Now realize that we've got some folks in here that do not have grandkids. But if you'll hold on long enough and live long enough, you'll have some. All right? And if you say, well, I'm a long way from that, then think about your own kids. Think about your nieces. Think about your nephews. Think about those folks. Because every one of us have an influence on somebody. It could be on somebody that's just a stranger, just like Miss Judy had on this couple that joined this past Sunday. But it could be somebody that's in your own family, just like Manasseh and just like Ephraim. And so, when you're thinking about a testimony, what should you tell those kids? Well, I believe the first thing that you ought to tell them is, tell them what you were before you got saved. Now, that doesn't mean that you go into all the gory details. You know, if you were a drug addict, you hadn't got to brag on the fact that, you know, that you used needles to shoot up. If you were a drunk, you don't need to talk about, yeah, I drank a fifth of Jack Daniels every week. You don't need to talk about that. But you can talk in generalities that you were a sinner on your way to hell. The second thing that you ought to tell them is how you met the Lord. How that God began to work in your heart. How that the sweet Spirit of God began to convict you of your sin. You knew that you were lost. You knew you were on your way to hell. And the third thing is you tell them how you were changed once you met the Lord. I mentioned to you a few moments ago that Israel's name now used to be Jacob. Do you know what the name Jacob meant? It meant he was a deceiver. And that's exactly what he did in that early life of his. I mean, he was ripping people off right and left. But the law of sowing and reaping caught up with him. And I'll share that with you in just a moment. But the first thing that I want you to see is this. He told his testimony in front of his grandkids. So when you get the opportunity, tell them how you met the Lord. Let me give you a second thing very quickly. Not only did he tell them his testimony, but I want you to notice how he described his God. Look at verse number 3. And Jacob said unto Joseph, now those two boys are right there with him. He said, God Almighty. In other words, he is the Almighty One. He is the one that is omnipotent. He's all powerful. Nobody is more powerful than God. And so he is telling them how great and how awesome his God is. And so when you are in the presence of your grandkids, you ought to brag on God. You ought to talk about the goodness of God. You ought to talk about what God means to you. I love it whenever I get a chance to talk about Jesus has supplied this need. Jesus has done that. Jesus has done this. And we ought to look for those opportunities. You know, when you only have limited time with them, you got to make the most of the limited time. It's not like your time with them is infinite. Jacob knows that his time is limited. He's sick. He's never met these boys. He knows that his time is coming near to die and be buried with his fathers and go to be with the Lord. He knows this. You get this when you read the entire chapter. And so when we have that opportunity, we ought to take that opportunity to always talk and somehow get that conversation going about what Jesus means to us. And so I hope that when you think about the Lord, I hope that it's right there on the tip of your tongue that you are ready to testify about how great and awesome God is. I think about some of the stories that have happened in my life and how that when we were younger and we didn't have grandkids and our kids were little, how that when God would do something, we would share that with our children. I'll tell you a funny story real quick. At one time, I had to drive a school bus part-time for hospitalization. When you got three kids, you need hospitalization. I mean, we've had them bust chins, we've had them bust heads, we've had them break arms on trampolines. I mean, we've had it all. Well, one day I had a buddy of mine, he called me up, and he said, Tommy, listen, I need you to help me referee three basketball games tonight. Now, I haven't refereed basketball games at that time in probably a year. My referee shoes, I'd use them to paint. I'd use them to cut grass. I mean, they were awful. And I told him, I said, Mike, look, I got the night free, but, man, I don't even have any basketball shoes that are dark, and I certainly don't have any referee shoes anymore. He said, I don't care if you wear wingtips. I got to have a referee tonight at Five Forks Middle School. And I said, okay. Well, he was going to give me $15 a game. I don't know what they make now, but I guarantee it's more than $15 a game. All right? And so I'm praying and I'm saying, Lord, I need a pair of shoes. I don't want to go over there and look like a yo-yo. I mean, you may be a lousy referee. I didn't think I was, but if I were a referee, I wanted to look like one. And I said, I need to get a pair of shoes, but Lord, I'm only going to make $45. I need some cheap shoes. And so I prayed about it. That afternoon, I hop on that bus. I go deliver these kids. I'm coming back through Snellville. I turn on Oak Road, and at the time where they have this huge, pretty building now, there used to be a Kroger shopping center there. And there was a place that was called the Sports Shoe. Well, I pulled into the parking lot. I popped the brake, jumped off that bus, ran into the sports shoe, and I already prayed before I got in. I said, "Now, Lord, I need a pair of shoes for $40. And I thought, at least I won't go in the hole tonight. I'm only going to make $45, but if I could get a pair of refereeing shoes for $40, I could at least help Mike out and it'd give me 3 hours of exercise. Well, I go in. They got a sale on shoes for $40. And I'm thinking, boy, this is good. God has answered this prayer. And I got to looking, they didn't have my size. I said, "Lord, you got shoes for $40, but you didn't give my size." I asked him, "Do you have anything in the back?" "Nope, that's all we got." "We got these over here." Those were $60. I'm thinking, I'm going in the hole, $15. But I've given him my word. All right, so I bought the shoes, and I'm just irritated thinking, "Lord, you didn't answer my prayer." I jumped on that bus, cranked it up, took the emergency brake off, pulled out of the shopping center onto Oak Road. Now, it had lane going this way, then a turning lane, and a lane coming this way, just like it does now. And all of a sudden, in front of me, I saw something. I said, "That looked like money." And I thought, "I'm going to stop." I pulled that bus into the turning lane, hit the emergency brake again, hit the flashers, opened that door. I didn't jump out. I looked. No cars. I jumped off, and all of a sudden a gust of wind came, and it blew a $20 bill over next to the curb. And I got that $20 bill, and I thought, I got my shoes for $40. I got home, and I told my kids about that. And Dallas goes, "Let's go see if they sell more." Me and him got in my truck, went back down to Snellville. Man, we're looking through bushes. We're looking through everything. Didn't find it at all, but God answered that prayer. You know what I did? I shared that with my family of God's supplying. And you have been supplied just like I have. God's given you great things. You say, "God hadn't been good to me." You're crazy. There's folks all over this world that's got it a million times worse than you do. And so God supplies our need. And so what do? We make sure that we describe our Almighty God to our kids and grandkids. Let me give you a third thing. In verse number 4, there are four things that he gave to them or told to them that were promises from God. Now, has God ever given you a promise? That's something you can share. Look with me at verse 4. "And he said unto me, Behold, I will make thee fruitful." That's the first thing. "And I'll multiply thee." In other words, there's going to be a bunch of your kids. And then he says, "I will make of thee a multitude of people." In other words, there's going to be not just a few of you at your house. There's going to be a whole multitude of people in this land that you're going to have. And then he says, "And I will give you this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession." Now, one of the things that God has promised Jacob, it's the same thing that he promised Abraham. He's just reiterating the Abrahamic covenant. That's all he's doing. He said, "I'm going to make of you a great nation. You're going to have," he told Abraham, he said, "your kids and grandkids are going to be so great, it's going to be like trying to count the stars in the sky. It's going to be like going down to the beach and try to count the sand." And do you know that every year, the population in Israel just continues to grow? Every once in a while, one of the things that I'll do is I'll flip on a YouTube video and I'll watch something about Israel. I watched something the other night how that God was blessing that land, and they were talking about how that they take those deserts down in what is called the Negev. and they have planted these trees, and they have drip irrigation where that they just get a little bit, but it's precisely where it needs to be, and they have turned these desert, basically hills and plains, into lush paradises where they grow things. I mean, they have hot houses that grow tomatoes year-round. They have trees that just produce fruit like crazy. Do you know that the average milk cow in America is milked twice a day? Did you know that dairy cows in Israel are milked three times a day? It's amazing how that God has blessed that place. And he promised four things to Jacob. And one of the things that we ought to do is we ought to take the promises of God. And we ought to begin to tell them, you know, God promised that if we would believe on the Lord Jesus, that we could be saved. You know, you're not saved just because you're my grandson. You're not saved just because you're my granddaughter. You got to meet the Lord. And so when we have the promises of God, we share those with those munchkins that come into our lives. You know, the little fellow that got saved that's 10 years old. Got saved on Sunday. Brother Don's been praying for him for months. I've been praying for him for months. His mom and dad have been talking to him, and they wanted to make sure that he really understood. But this past Sunday, after being saturated with prayer, I believe that God finally spoke to his little heart, and he just knew that he needed to be saved. And the Lord called him to himself, and old Ryan just said, Lord, I need you. I trust you, Lord. And he was as happy as he could be. You know, I guess if I were going to describe it, he was peacock proud. All right. And so we share the promises of God. Let me give you one final thing. Jacob told him about the grandma. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. You know, kids are interested in where they come from. Look with me at verse 7. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel, your grandma, died by me in the land of Canaan in the way. When yet there was but a little way to come under Ephrath, I buried her there in the way of Ephrath. The same is Bethlehem. You know, they've got places where they say this is Rachel's tomb if you go to the little city of Bethlehem. I really don't know if that's true or not, but I know she was buried somewhere in that vicinity because the scriptures tell us that. And so she had been dead for a while, but old Jacob hadn't forgot her. He remembered the woman that he loved. Now you think about old Jacob. He hoodooed his brother. He got the birthright. He got the blessing. And when Esau got mad about it, him and his mama concocted this thing, and they said, we got to get him out of here before Esau kills him. So he went on the lam. He got to running. Well, what you sow, you reap. Well, what does he do? He goes to a place, and he's got an uncle there named Uncle Laban. And he gets to looking at one of them cousins. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's weird. Well, evidently it wasn't weird in biblical times because they married cousins sometime. Maybe the DNA had not gotten so weak where that it would be causing any type of problems back then. But he gets to noticing he's got a young daughter named Rachel, and he thinks, she's good looking. That's a good looking girl right there. Uncle Laban, can I marry Rachel? Yep, you got to work 7 years, though, to get her. All righty, she looks that good to me. 7 long years he works for his uncle. At the end of 7 years, boy, there's a big wedding celebration. Now, remember, in Jewish weddings, they were always veiled up. So, They get this big wedding set up. They go in. Everything's consummated. Next morning, he goes, woo! He done married the wrong woman. He married Leah, her older sister. She had a cockeye. She wasn't pretty like the young one. She was ugly. You say, she might have been sweet. She might have been. She had a lot of kids, you know. But the one that he loved was Rachel. And he goes, you've deceived me. He said, that if you'll work 7 more years, I'll let you marry Rachel. So, 14 years later, he finally gets the woman that he wants. And I'm going to tell you something. He loved her until the day he died. Not the day she died, he died. And he began to tell his grandson, he said, let me tell you some things about your grandma. Well, he said, first of all, he said, she died on the road home. Sometimes traveling's tough and, you know, and your grandma just, you know, she just couldn't make it. But boy, she was a good lady. Boy, she longed for the day to be able to see her grandkids. And she never got to see you boys, but I'm going to tell you something. One of these days you'll get to meet her. Then we were almost home. That's kind of sad. I mean, we were almost back home when the Lord took her. He said, I buried her by the road. He said, there's a place that's marked there. And you guys, if you're ever out on that road, you could probably see where she was buried. You ought to visit your grandma's grave every once in a while. Just think about how good she was, how much she loved you. And I was with her when she died. And I'm telling you, there's never been a woman like your grandma. And he was bragging on his wife. Well, I believe that when you love one another like that, those kids see it. Those grandkids see it. Those nieces and nephews see it. And we ought to impart that type of commitment and that type of love to those little ones that are watching us. But not only do we impart that, we impart wisdom to them. Don't you think you're smarter than a 10-year-old boy? Sure you are. You say, well, I'm not that bright. You're still smarter than a 10-year-old boy. You got a lot more wisdom than they've got. Not only should you impart wisdom, but I believe that you ought to pray for them. He prays for them. The Bible talks about there's a blessing. I believe there's times when you give them financial assistance in the right way. I don't think that you give them $15,000 and say, hey, go buy you a souped-up car. You don't get that. But there's times when you get them some school clothes. You know, there's times when, you know, you take them out to eat and get them a pizza. There's times when you do all kind of stuff like that. But may I say that the most important thing that you do is you give them spiritual guidance. First of all, you impart your testimony and you try to get them saved. And then you try to get them to understand the things of God and to have a tenderness toward the things of God so that they always want God in their life. I don't want to raise an infidel, and I don't want my grandkids to turn out to be an infidel. I want them to love God as much or more than I love God. Well, if you're looking at old Jacob, there's some other things, and I don't have time because there's really 2 or 3 more sermons out of this passage. Not only did he say 4 things, but he did 4 things, and he gave 4 things. Maybe I'll give that to you at a different time. Father, I want to thank you for